Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's 10th podcast. Thank you all for joining us today. My name is John Zagluel, owner and operator of Sports Talk Chicago. And today, for the first time, we have a guest host, Yanni Zantefis. Yanni, how are you today?
I'm doing great, John. How are you doing?
Doing very well. It's nice to be here. It's nice for everybody to start listening. Just a few quick announcements. Here on Twitter, we have our own Twitter page at Chi Talk Sports, C-H-I Talk Sports. Make sure to follow it. We have over 300 followers right now. Also, follow my personal accounts on the links at the top of the page on my own personal Twitter, Instagram, Google+, and LinkedIn accounts. And please keep giving us some feedback on what we're doing. We always want to make your viewing experience our number one priority. So let me know if you like this podcast or if you really don't like it. Tell me how we can improve it. Now, our cover story for today regards the Bears and the firing of Mark Trestman, the head coach, Aaron Kromer, the offensive coordinator, and Phil Emery, the GM. Trestman's firing comes after a 13-19 record over two seasons with the Bears. Obviously, he went 8-8 in 2013. This year, a dismal 5-11 record. Just horrible to watch.
Pathetic.
For me, especially for you too, Yanni. I mean, yeah. We were hanging out a couple times. We watched the Bears play. We watched them lose badly to the New England Patriots.
It was so horrific. I mean, this decision by the Bears, I think, is the best thing that could happen for this team. And I know that they're in the rebuilding process, but I just can't say how happy I am with this decision.
Exactly. And, you know, obviously the firing of an offensive coach means that now the Bears hopefully will adopt or will hire a new coach who adopts a defensive policy. Because obviously that offensive policy was not working for the Bears, especially having two straight games giving up 50-plus points against New England and the Packers earlier in the year. So hopefully the offense will produce as much as they could next year, but we also need to see the defense come alive. That's why the firing of Aaron Kromer was kind of needed. I mean, Trestman ran the plays anyway, so you might as well fire the offensive coordinator too.
Yeah.
And then you got Phil Emery as well, the GM, who I don't know if he should have been fired, but he was fired anyway.
Who, the GM?
Phil Emery.
Oh, well, I mean, I think firing Phil Emery was a great idea, or, well, not an idea, but I think it was a good thing to do because... You can't just go to Trestman and say, oh, you know, he's our number one problem. No. Yeah, I mean, who gave Cutler, you know, his brand new contract? Who signed Mel Tucker? Who signed Aaron Kromer? Who signed Trestman? This all goes back to Phil Emery. So I think, you know, it was a great idea, and it's about time.
That's exactly. The Bears now, they're going to start rebuilding. I don't know who they're going to look for the offensive coordinator, GM, and head coach spot. That is yet to be determined. So I'm not really worried about the Bears at this point just because of the fact that everything is so much in disarray right now. Nobody really knows what's going to happen. But hopefully once the Bears do make a signing, we will be there to cover it as well. There will be at least an article or hopefully another podcast up about that. And also, we wanted Yanni to talk about maybe some Jay Cutler stuff as well. I know Cutler, he got benched in week 16 to Jimmy Clausen. Last week he started and the Bears ended up losing 13-9 and all the Bears' points were off of field goals on top of it, so not really nice to see. So what can you tell us right now about Jay Cutler?
Well, I mean, it's pretty pathetic, you know, that Jay Cutler has been in this league for 9 seasons, and I believe he's thrown about 183 touchdowns, but he's thrown about 153 interceptions. And that's 9 years in the league, and he's only had 3 winning seasons. Let me say that again. 3 winning seasons. To me, that is not a franchise quarterback. I think that he should be treated just like a Jake Locker or a Geno Smith. I mean, this guy sucks. He's horrible, and he doesn't deserve any of this money, period.
I agree with you on all those points except for one. I don't know if anybody knew, but did you know that this season, Jay Cutler actually had one of his career years in football? He passed for 3,700 yards, which is the most he's ever done with the Bears. He's also had the most touchdown passes ever with the Bears, and he ranked in the top 10 with 28 passes this year. Now, I know he was second in the league in interceptions, but he also was top 10 in completion percentage as well as actual completions and pass attempts. So, it wasn't a horrible year. Individually, it was a good year, but Cutler had moments where he kind of, like, in clutch moments, he did not produce for the Bears.
Yeah.
And it was the fact that maybe... As far as the whole marathon went, he did well. But in some of the sprints that he needed to complete, he did not do well in. And that's why the Bears are actually, I've heard now that they are shopping him, and there are teams willing to take on that massive contract.
And, you know, I have heard maybe some possible options for Cutler could be maybe Houston or, you know, maybe even the Jets. I mean, these are teams that don't really have a locked-in quarterback. So, I mean, it's not like that these, you know, that there aren't options. And even, like, the Tennessee Titans, you know, they need a quarterback. And, you know, I think he went to college in Tennessee, too, or somewhere around there maybe. I'm not sure. But, I mean, I agree with your points, John, about how he leads, you know.
Yeah, statistically, yeah, he had a good year.
However, he is not a leader whatsoever. He cannot lead a team. He doesn't know how to gather any sort of group of men. And I kind of compare him to a tick, and he just sucks the life out of somebody. He deflates everybody. And you know what? I've never seen him smile until he signed his big contract.
I can agree with that.
It's the only time when I saw this guy smile.
But also, good options, Yanni. Remember, the Texans, they used three different quarterbacks this year, and yet almost made the playoffs. They were eliminated on the last day.
Yeah.
And also, the who else did you mention? You mentioned Tennessee. They've used three different quarterbacks. And the Jets have used Geno Smith and Michael Vick. That's been an on-and-off combination all year. So those are teams who are looking for a guy like Jay Cutler who could at least perform average, above-average numbers. Maybe not. You can't see Tom Brady-type numbers out of him, but you can certainly see, again, 3,700 passing yards, 28 touchdowns. That's something that the Jets, Texans, other teams would really love to see in a quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. And then just to touch on maybe like some coaching options, I have this very, very bold name for you, John. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
All right. Sean Payton.
Sean Payton, the coach of the New Orleans Saints.
Yes, Sean Payton.
You think so?
I think that the Bears can make a hit for him. I think they should give him a shot because he played for the Bears.
Yep.
And he's all about them and everything like that. And there are some rumors going around that he may not want to stay and that New Orleans may possibly be out of the Drew Brees era. And they may want to move away from that. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sean Payton is a name that you start to hear.
Well, Sean Payton, too, you know, he's on the chopping block as it is. The Saints went 7-9 again this year. They were one game out of first place, but they still ended up not making the playoffs. Again, that's the same thing that happened with Atlanta coach Mike Smith. He was fired despite missing the playoffs again by only one game. But then again, they went 7-9, the Falcons.
Yeah.
Also, another name I've been hearing about, Mike Singletary, former Bears linebacker and former coach of the 49ers before Jim Harbaugh came
in.
Now, Singletary, the thing with him was he was fired over there because I don't think he supported Kaepernick as much as Harbaugh did.
Okay.
And he supported Alex Smith, who now is obviously successful with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
So that's another name to watch out for. And remember, Singletary was a linebacker, mean, fierce linebacker on the Bears way back in the day in the 1980s and 90s era. So it'll be interesting to see, obviously, many options out there right now, but no one yet to be decided on the Bears again in a complete state of disarray right now. And now we're going to move on to some Chicago Cubs news. Now, first of all, they have been in the headlines a lot recently, making a lot of free agent moves. I'm going to touch on a few of those right now. First of all, as we all know, the Cubs won the John Lester sweepstakes. Now, some career facts about Lester. He has a career ERA of 3.58, so pretty good, about average. But last season, he had a career season in which his ERA was a career low 2.46. With the exception of 2012, Lester has won at least 15 games and posted an ERA of 3.75 or lower in every year since 2008. He will lead the Cubs' starting rotation, will be their number one starter. Yanni, any thoughts on John Lester?
Well, I think this is a big, big move for the Cubs. I think this will help them greatly. I think by having this kind of a pitcher who is just coming off a career-high season from last season, you know, last year, I think this is a great move, and kudos to the Cubs on this one.
Also, we're going to talk about Jason Hamill. Now, remember last year, Hamill went 8-5 with an ERA at 2.98 before being traded by the Cubs to Oakland with that Jeff Samardzija deal. Overall, Hamill had a career year last year, going 10-11, ERA under 3.5. Although he has been in the league for 9 years, last year he finally put it all together, and I'm thinking a number three starter now behind John Lester and Jake Arrieta. That was a good move for the Cubs. They have three experienced, knowledgeable starters at the top of that starting rotation, and the last two spots have three candidates to fill those last two spots, so it'll be nice to see from that. Also, going on two catchers the Cubs have acquired recently. First of all, the Cubs made a trade with the Diamondbacks for Miguel Montero, who made the NL All-Star team this past season. He has a career slash line of .264, .342, .421, which is above average for the catcher's position. He will provide some much-needed offensive production, because remember, Wellington Castillo last year hit a measly .237 with an OPS that failed to reach .700. David Ross was acquired by the Cubs. He's not an offensive threat. He's nearing 40, yet he will provide a veteran presence in the Cubs clubhouse and will catch games exclusively for John Lester. Here's an interesting stat now. In Boston, Lester and Ross had excellent chemistry, proved by a 2.77 ERA that Lester had when Ross was catching. Wow. Ross provides some depth at that catcher's position, and this means that Wellington Castillo could be on the move very soon, and I've heard rumors now that the Cubs are shopping him. And finally, this was a move that kind of started early in the offseason. Nobody really heard about it, but the Cubs acquired Tommy La Stella from the Atlanta Braves for Adrois Viscaiano, who is a pitcher. As a rookie with the Atlanta Braves last year, La Stella appeared in 93 games. He had .251 with 80 hits. He'll provide some depth at second base, possibly backing up or starting over Javier Baez, depending on how Baez did in Winter League this year. I know they're tracking that. Anyways, La Stella spent 2013 in the minors. He had .356 with 22 doubles and a .936 OPS in 88 games, showing that he was a productive player, and he still has a chance to be that same player. And now, after the Cubs, we'll move on to their counterpart, the White Sox, and some of their offseason moves so far this year. First of all, Jeff Samardzija. As we all know, he used to be on the Cubs. The Sox got him this year. And although he has only been a permanent starting pitcher for 3 years, he's made at least 28 starts each season of those 3 years, from 2012 to 2014. And he has an average ERA of 3.71 over those 3 years, near league average. This past season, Samardzija made the NL All-Star team, had an ERA under 3.0 at 2.99. For the second straight season, Samardzija also had a 200 strikeout, 200 innings pitched season. He will form a dynamic 1-2 punch with Chris Sale at the top of the White Sox rotation. Yanni, what are you thinking about this move here by the White Sox?
Well, I think this is another great move for the White Sox. Now, are they going to be great like the Cubs will most likely be in the future? No. But are they going to be better than they were their last season? Yes, they will be. I think that by the time the Crosstown Cup comes around, that Crosstown Cup is going to be one heck of a game to watch. So, all in all, I think this is a great move by the Sox.
Exactly. And also, we'll talk about Adam LaRoche for a minute. LaRoche has hit 20 or more home runs in every year since 2005, with the exception of an injury-plagued season in 2011. Last season, LaRoche had 26 homers and had 96 RBIs, while earning an OPS above 800 for the seventh time in his 11-year career. He is an above-average first baseman and has been productive for nearly a decade. So he and Jose Abreu will split time between first base and designated hitter, giving the Sox another 1-2 tandem in the heart of their lineup. So again, what are you thinking about this LaRoche signing? Obviously, it's looking good on paper. This is looking very well for the Sox.
Yeah, so I think on paper, yes, this looks like another great move by the Sox. You know, now we'll have LaRoche and we'll have Abreu, and you know, hopefully it all goes well. And I think that this is going to be great.
Now, one thing we could both agree on: the Sox lost a lot of games last year because of their bullpen.
Right.
Their bullpen. Ronald Belisario, ERA over 6. Yeah. They never, you know, the Sox have never had a really sincere closer since Bobby Jenks fell in 2009.
Right.
So a good move by the Sox. They got David Robertson. The fact that Robertson successfully succeeded Mariano Rivera and posted a 39-save season is impressive. The shocking part is that he did not even make the All-Star team. Anyways, Robertson has a career ERA under 3, has been a successful setup man until 2014, then he took over the closer role, and again, 39 saves and 43 chances, only blew 4 saves all year, ERA at about 3.1. So, what are you thinking? Robertson, obviously a good move for the Sox.
Yeah, obviously, this sounds like a great move for the White Sox, and on paper, you know, once again, this sounds like a good guy. It's like any other player. He has to prove himself, and I think that the bullpen will definitely be better this year, and hope for the best with this guy.
Also, another big move for the White Sox, Melky Cabrera. Cabrera has a career batting average of .286. He has had 5 years in which he has driven in at least 60 runs. Last season, here's some big stats about him. Hit .301, 16 homers, 73 RBIs, 35 doubles, 173 hits, and an OPS above 800. Cabrera could do it all. He is a phenomenal all-around player, and he will be able to be probably a number two hitter in the Sox lineup, mm-hmm. and it's nice to see that he could get base hits or muscle up and hit a ball out of the ballpark if needed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, now that we have Jose Abreu, who definitely opened up some eyes last year, now we got Melky Cabrera. I mean, what more can you ask for? I mean, so far, you know, the infield looks great, the pitching looks really good so far, and so does this new batting lineup that they're slowly starting to rebuild.
All right, and finally, the final move, which was kind of, again, at the start of the offseason, no one really heard about it. Zach Duke, this is a nice story. Duke started off his career as a starting pitcher with the Pirates, even made the NL All-Star team in 09 despite losing 16 games. Yet after a dismal 2010 season, in which his ERA reached 5.72, he became a left-handed specialist out of the bullpen. In 2012, he posted a 1.32 ERA in a limited amount of games, and last season, Duke had a career year with the Brewers, going 5-1 in 74 games with an ERA of 2.45. And again, as we mentioned earlier, he is a major upgrade compared to the Sox former setup man, Ronald Belisario, who, again, had an ERA just above 6 last year and went 2-8 as a setup guy. So both the Sox and Cubs, as we just finished up our baseball, you know, discussion here, they made multiple acquisitions, made them serious contenders for 2015. Oh, yeah. They're looking like two teams that are going to be good also not just for 2015, but also a couple years down the road. Obviously, the Sox, I'm sure they're going to start focusing on rebuilding their farm system too, mm-hmm. so they could have success like the Cubs, who have already started rebuilding. But overall, I think both teams are going to be very good next year, you know, the year to come. And again, an interesting fact, both teams have not made the playoffs together since 2008. That was last year both teams made the playoffs in the same year. So right. It'll be nice to see that probably this year, and for sure 2016, we could see that again.
Yep.
And now we're going to move on to the Chicago Bulls. And the Bulls right now, they won yesterday 106-101 over the Denver Nuggets. And something quick here. The Bulls, 23-10. They obviously lead the Central Division in the Eastern Conference, but also as far as the actual Eastern Conference goes, the Bulls only 1.5 games out of the top spot, which is held currently by the Raptors at 24-8. So the Bulls, they're sitting pretty right now, number 4 seed, and they're having a dominant year so far to start it off. Yesterday's game came down to the wire, as you saw. The Bulls, with a minute left to go, they were still only up by about 2 points. So a very close game there near the end. They ended up pulling it out against the Denver Nuggets, and a Nuggets team who's not performing that well as we thought they would this year. Yanni, anything to say about the Bulls just in general?
Well, I gotta say, man, you gotta give huge, you know, just credits to Tom Thibodeau. I mean, this guy's a great coach. I mean, you saw what he did last year with the amount of talent that he was given. I mean, he wasn't given a lot. And I think by Jimmy Butler stepping up this year, I mean, this is just, I mean, Jimmy Butler averages about 21.9 points a game. Then we got Pau Gasol with 11 rebounds a game. Then you got Rose with about 5 assists. And then you have Pau Gasol with 2.3 blocks a game. And then last night, Pau Gasol went off and he got, I believe it was 5 or 6 blocks with a career-high 17 points. And just once again, I'm very impressed with the Bulls. And I'm happy for them that, you know, they're having this great success. And they were on a 7-game winning streak until they faced the Brooklyn Nets. And that was a pretty disappointing game, but I think they'll get their act together when they're facing the Celtics this Saturday.
Exactly, and also a quick thing, if you guys have nothing to do and you want to do something to help out your own home team, the Bulls, make sure to vote for them for the NBA All-Star game. Right now I've heard that Jimmy Butler is most likely going to make the team. Derrick Rose, Pau Gasol, other guys who are very worthy of the team. So make sure to vote for them on the NBA.com page. I'm sure it'll direct you from there. But again, Butler stepping it up this year, 22 points a game. And also Pau Gasol averaging a double-double a game. Joakim Noah having another productive year. And also Derrick Rose, I hate to say it because I don't really like him anymore, but he had a very nice game last night, nearly a double-double. And, you know, I think he's averaging around 17, 18 points, and that's not bad for coming back off of a two-year break.
Yeah.
That's not that bad. And the fact that, again, he's averaging 5 assists a game, that's what you want point guards to do. And it's nice to see that Rose is returning to his rookie year form where he averaged 17 points a game, about 6 assists a game. I'd rather take that over a 25-point game guy with no assists.
Yeah, I mean, And as frustrated as some people may be by saying, you know, Rose is only making, you know, this many shots, he's, you know, I mean, we have to keep in mind here, I mean, he's kind of still a work in progress. He's gotten, he screwed up his knees, he screwed up this, he screwed up that. I think next year, I mean, we have to consider the fact that Rose, you know, he's on the floor, he's playing. I mean, that's the thing, you know, that we can only ask for. He's on the floor, he's playing, who cares how many points he gets? He's playing, he's making assists, and last night I think he had about...
He had nine or ten assists. He almost, because I remember he almost had a double-double last night. Yeah. Came this close.
Yeah, and then he had one block last night. And but yeah, I mean, myself as a big Bulls fan, I'm a little frustrated with the shots that he takes in games, but I mean, I'm not going to rush him too much because I want to see him get better. And I think next year we're going to see a better Derrick Rose for sure.
Exactly, exactly. I agree with all of that. So now we're going to move on to some Chicago Blackhawks news, and then we'll also have some news now coming up about the BCS National Championship game. But first, we're talking about the Hawks right now. So again, talking about the Blackhawks right now. Now, as far as the Hawks go, they are 25-11-2. They are second in the Western Conference. They have scored 52 points, and yesterday they suffered a heartbreaker nearly into overtime, but they lost 3-2 to the Washington Capitals, and that was at Nationals Park in Washington, D.C. And so, again, the Blackhawks playing in another Winter Classic, their third in as many years, and they ended up coming short yesterday.
No, yeah, you know, I mean, it was kind of a disappointing loss. But, I mean, I wouldn't be concerned with this Blackhawks team. I mean, they've won the Stanley Cup, and they clearly have all-stars on their team. I mean, you know, when you got Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, you know, Marian Hossa and Patrick Sharp, I mean, your team's going to be outstanding, you know, so I wouldn't have any concern, and I see this team going very deep in the playoffs once again this year.
Yeah, and the Hawks, you know, it's kind of a dynasty ever since they won it back in 2011. They have just been outstanding. They have been in the playoffs every year since then, and it's nice to see them, you know, keeping that dynasty going, because it certainly is a dynasty now that they've won two in the past, you know, 5 years. I think that qualifies as a dynasty. So nice to see for the Hawks. Again, remember, 25-11-12, second place. They're only out of the first place spot by 2 points, so watch out for them, and watch for that race later in the year, because that, between the Hawks, Anaheim, and Nashville, that is going to be a race to watch at the end of this season for hockey. We're going to move on now and talk just a little bit about the national championship game coming up on January 7th between the Oregon Ducks and the Ohio State Buckeyes. Yesterday, we saw two bowl games on. It was the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl. In the Rose Bowl, Oregon beat Florida State, and it was a close game, actually, until about the third quarter, where Oregon really just took control. Marcus Mariota had a big game for Oregon, and again, Oregon, they were the number three seed. They're moving on, and as far as the Sugar Bowl goes, it was Alabama, the number one seed, versus number four seeded Ohio State. And again, you know what? This is what I like about this system compared to the BCS. You got the 3 and 4 ranked teams are playing for the national championship. The 1 and 2 teams are out. That's something you you want to see.
One correction. Actually, Oregon was number 2 and Florida State was number 3.
Ah, okay. So the number 2 and the 4 seeds, the 1 seed and the 2 seed, that's no more. It's, you know, this is what I like about it. And what my dream to see is the fact that college football becomes just like March Madness, where you got every team who has won 6 games plays in a whole bracket-style tournament until somebody wins it all. Yeah. I think that's what... that's what I'd love to see. I don't know if that's ever going to happen in my lifetime, but as sure, I mean, just in general, that'd be a good, I think that'd be a better idea. But again, this is much better than the rigged BCS system.
Yeah.
And again, another interesting stat that I just found out about, this has been the first year in a national championship that has not included an SEC team since 2005. So again... wow. Nice to see that it's, you know, it's starting to get a little mixed up a little more, and it's nice to see again that, you know, the 2 and 4 ranked teams in the nation are playing, and it's not the 1 and 2. So again, nice to see that. Now we're going to move on to our interview with guest host Yanni Zentafis, a new segment here. This is going to complement our end segments like the odd sports story, the punchline of the day, and the announcer's call of the day. So we're going to talk to Yanni here for a minute, who is an athlete as well as I. But Yanni plays for the Tri-State Dodgers baseball team. based right out of here in Tinley Park, Illinois. So, Yanni, please tell me a little bit about how your team's doing. How have the first couple of practices been? How has the chemistry been? What are you guys doing right now?
Well, first of all, you know, obviously we're a brand new team. We've got about three college players, and I believe one of them is still actually playing, and I think also one of them is another assistant coach on some other team. And overall, I mean, it's a great environment to be in. I mean, we got great players on there. I'm really looking forward to this brand new season with this team. I had a great season last year with John on the Shockers. Very, very fun. But yeah, I mean, I've learned a lot so far, and Eric Mason is the head coach, really, and he's taught me a lot. He's taught everybody, you know, a bunch of stuff, and I'm just really looking forward to it.
And for sure, I mean, I've heard much about your team so far from you, from Alec, from other people around, and you guys are sounding like, you know, a quality team with a lot of guys who know each other.
Right.
Tell me how that plays, you know, team chemistry. Could you kind of tell me how that plays into a factor?
Well, the nice thing about having, you know, friends that we've been around before in school and stuff, I mean, that kind of helps us blend even better, and I've seen it and I felt it in the practices where, you know, we're all, you know, we're cool, but when it's time to get serious, we get serious and we get our job done and we try and work as hard as we can. And, you know, once again, I mean, it's just great to be around, you know, just friends that I see every day in school.
That's very nice, Yanni. Thank you for that quick interview about, again, the Tri-State Dodgers. And again, that's a full-time travel team, 15-year-old team based right here out of Tinley Park, Illinois. And remember that they will be starting their season, as far as regular season games again, in April, hopefully, depending on how many kids make the high school team this year, Obviously 15U. But again, watch out for the Tri-State Dodgers. And we're going to move on now to our final closing segment, starting with the odd sports story of the day. This story does come out of the United States, first of all. Yesterday a reader tweeted at me, this is an article by the way, urging me to tune into Fox Sports where unathletic adult men were racing tiny bikes around a tiny track. He wasn't lying, and I watched a good half hour without ever figuring out exactly what or who or what I was watching. So again, just kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
Unathletic guys riding tiny bikes on Fox Sports, which is shocking. I mean, I thought they were more professional, but just... Yeah. Odd sports story. That's what the segment's called, and that's what you're going to get out of it. Next, we're going to go on to our punchline of the day segment. And again, this will be just a sports joke or a sports-themed joke. And this joke regards American football, actually, the NFL. So, what do you call a bunch of millionaires sitting around watching the Super Bowl? The Dallas Cowboys. Man, that's pretty funny, you know, because Jerry Jones, I hate him anyway.
It's kind of true, actually. Oh! It's kind of true.
So, we'll now move on to our Announcer's Call of the Day segment. Again, this is one of our famous segments. This is my personal favorite as well. So, please hold on. We are going to get you a great clip for you guys to listen to and enjoy. So, I'm going to set the mood a little bit here. This is 2007, the Fiesta Bowl between Boise State and Oklahoma.
Okay.
Now, earlier in the game, Boise State ended up scoring a touchdown on a 4th and 18 conversion to tie it up to send the game to OT, which was miraculous in its own sense. Now Boise State in this situation, they just scored a touchdown, they are down 42-41, and instead of going for the extra point, they're going to go for a 2-point conversion, but there's going to be a little twist, and we'll have you guys take a listen.
At Division 2 and Division 3, hey, I was President's vote to have a playoff.
I'm not arguing that point, but they're not
Boise State this game. Had their shot at Oklahoma, and they're giving them a heck of a shot.
Guys, I still
don't need to worry about anything else right now. Let's take a look at this.
Zabransky, I still think him with some type of run-pass option going to the right.
Boise State for the win. They hand it off to Johnson. Boise State has won the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. Can you believe it?
What a great game. I mean, you know, Boise State, what they did there is they were going for the 2 points. The quarterback ended up fake throwing it and handing it off behind his back to the running back, who ran it in from 2 yards out. What a great game that was. I remember watching that as a little kid, watching that game live. Just what a way to end it. Anyways, that'll be it for this podcast, our 10th one. What a milestone for Sports Talk Chicago. I'm John Zagluel.
And I'm Yannis and Tevis.
And again, thank you all for watching. I really appreciate it. Remember, follow us on Twitter at Chi Talk Sports. Follow me, LinkedIn, Google+, Twitter, Instagram. Make sure to hit me up there. Also, make sure to keep, again, giving us feedback. Tell me how this was. I want to know what you think. And finally, remember to subscribe on the side of the page down near the bottom. Enter your email address in there. And basically, that means anytime there's a new post on the site, you'll get an email about it, and it'll give you a link right into your email. So again, thank you all for watching. Goodbye.